Hey guys, don't forget the 2023 Street Cop Training Conference, Nashville, Tennessee, April 23rd through the 28th. You do not want to miss this. So far, guest speakers, Rob O'Neill, the Navy SEAL that was responsible for killing Osama bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, U.S. Marine, Medal of Honor recipient, jumping on an IED to protect his platoon. Fox News host Tommy Lahren returns for 2023. Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Sheriff Mark Lamb, Sheriff David Clark, and more to come. You don't want to miss this event. We additionally have 20 of the country's top law enforcement educators giving you the best experience of your life. You will leave this event knowing more about your job and how to be proficient at the things you do, hands down, any other event that you'll ever attend. I personally guarantee it. Don't miss out. There's a room code at streetcop.com for our room block and room code at the Gaylord at Opry is where the event's taking place. Don't miss out on a discounted rate. The rate is from Sunday to Thursday. Put that in and find yourselves at a half-price room. Split it with a friend, but make sure you get there. You don't want to miss this event. It is going to be that good. If you trust me and you trust Street Cop, trust that you will leave there feeling like you've had an experience of a lifetime.
You trying to be a street cop?
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. Your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino. I have with me today a special guest all the way from one of my favorite places in the country. Although last time I was there, I don't remember much about it because the Wet Republic pool party got to me real good. Shout out to the two Chicago guys that I met at the Wet Republic pool party. But I'll let him introduce himself, tell you about his experience, who he is, what he does, and just appreciate you being here, brother. So go ahead and let everyone know who you are.
Thank you. My name's Chad Lyman. I'm a police officer here in Las Vegas, Nevada. Work for Metro. Been a police officer since 1998. I actually got started with the Portland Police Bureau in Portland, Oregon. And then in 04, transferred down to Vegas Metro and still active on the job in Vegas Metro. So from 98 to now, still doing the policing thing. In addition to my law enforcement work that I do, I started training Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and mixed martial arts in 98 as well, mainly in Portland, mainly because I was doing the job and I wanted to do have a better skill set. I started coaching Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and MMA in 06 here in Vegas professionally, and then started teaching subsequently law enforcement and other agencies. And then so that's kind of professionally. I'm a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I earned my black belt in 2012. I still train pretty much daily and then at some of the best gyms in the world and still coach weekly and have my own business where I run training and hands-on training primarily. And then on the personal side, married over 30 years, same gal. I've survived this crazy career with one woman. 30 plus years, still crazy in love with her, and we have 8 kids.
We got
3 daughters first, and then we have 5 boys. So kind of a unique family situation for being a copper, you know. Stayed with the same lady, had a bunch of kids with her, and still super happy with her. As I end the, I'm not gonna have to give her part of my retirement. I'm gonna give it all to her because she's still with me. So
that's awesome, yeah, man. That's really wonderful. Too,
you know what I mean, bro? That's kind of unique.
I would call it successful.
Yeah. Yeah. Have had a great career. Served in patrol, served as an FTO, served in gangs full time here in Vegas on a very active gang unit back in the day. Served in SWAT full time, served in our counterterrorism, although on like a street team, not like a detective where I was going after terrorists or any of that, but on our street teams here in Vegas, kind of anti-crime teams, if you will, served in advanced training. And then currently my job is I'm a full-time use force and tactical expert assigned to our union full-time, but I'm still a DTI. I'm still a firearms instructor and I still go on call outs, different stuff like that. But, that's what I do currently. In fact, I'm in my office at Vegas right now.
Do you, how many more years you got left?
It kind of depends. There's a couple things in the works. like you, I run a business on the side.
Yeah, what's the name of the business? Promote it. I mean, it's what you're here for, right?
So it's Code 4 Concepts Police Jiu-Jitsu. It's C4C Police Jiu-Jitsu. Code 4, like, hey, we've been in a fight, but we're Code 4 now. We did good. And Police Jiu-Jitsu. And I'm a partner in Progressive Force Concepts, which is a training company, PFC training out of Vegas here. So I kind of do both. We teach nationwide. We teach internationally prior to COVID. COVID's been a real pain in the butt. But I've got affiliates and departments that I work with nationwide.
Now, did you grow up in Portland, Oregon?
No. So I went up there for college. And when I went to school, they did the police corps bill. This is back under Clinton. And it was an opportunity where that particular administration thought that officers should be educated and it would make a difference in us. So they did a reverse GI Bill in a way. You went to college first, you got sponsored by an agency, and they held your debt in arrears for school. And then every year I worked for the sponsoring agency, which for me was a Portland Police Bureau, they forgave $20,000 of debt. And so that up to 5 years, you could get 5 years of your school debt forgiven by giving police service after graduation. So you had to go to school first, you earned your degree, you finished, you went to the police academy. If you survived FTEP, you were at a sponsoring agency that participated in the program. Every year you worked for that agency, they lopped off your college debt. And so I basically got a bachelor's degree first and then went to work for the Portland Police Bureau, served just over 5 years, because at the end of 5 years, they stopped forgiving student debt. I'm from Phoenix in LA. And Vegas kind of in the middle. I have family in Utah, Phoenix, LA. And so I did from 98 to 04 with the Portland Police Bureau, knowing that I would eventually move. So I was looking at different departments in the Southwest, which is where my wife and I, both of our families are from the Southwest part of the US. And so we settled in Vegas, kind of right in the middle.
What was it like working in Portland then?
Portland was challenging even then. So the challenge with Portland, Oregon is not the officers. The officers were actually very tight-knit. The challenge was the administration and the pandering and the political activist groups that actually take law enforcement in the wrong direction, in my opinion. I don't have any problem with oversight, if you want to call it that, or even community engagement. Those things are positive for the modern policing movement. And for us as modern police officers, I've seen such tremendous growth within our industry that came from us. It didn't come from a special interest group. It didn't come from a politician. It came from guys like you and I and guys who came before us going, hey, this is how we handle this situation, but we could do better. And us self-reflecting and critiquing and saying, hey, we've got to get better at X, Y, Z. Those changes have happened organically in the profession from the time I've been in it, from 98 to now. We've improved as a profession in some areas. The problem with Portland and the problem with a lot of it when this stuff gets politicized towards law enforcement is it becomes very, very hard to do your job because you reach a lot of opposition. And it was that way even in the late 90s, early 2000s. To give you an idea, the cops crew rode along with us several times and they said, while Portland does have its fair share of violence, it's not like a city like Chicago or some of these other cities who are really overridden with violence. But you can find everything you need there in Portland. What the cops crew did say is this and a couple other cities are the number one anti-police, anti-government sentiment on calls that they've ever seen. Even in the early 2000s, the level of opposition to just being a uniformed police officer in that city was unreal. And I didn't realize how bad it was until I got to Nevada, because that's all I knew. I started working for Vegas Metro, and it was like a huge weight was lifted off my shoulders. Those men and women who toil in cities, Democrat-run cities, and by the way, I'm not a big political hater. Like I have friends who are Democrats. I don't care who you voted for, but when you're extreme on either side, everyone else gets hurt by your ideologies. And to serve as a police officer in Portland under the pressure and strain of the scrutiny those men and women get, I have nothing but respect for those cops.
What do you say to police officers now who work in those environments or those cities, those overran anti-police sentiment cities, you know, especially with your history of going somewhere else, what's some advice you would give somebody if they're sitting there going, I'm at the NYPD, I'm at Philly PD, I'm at Metro DC, or, you know, it's so bad here. They treat us so horribly. The public is so bad to us. And that's not all of the whole area, but significantly, we hear the complaints from those places, Chicago, right? What do you say to a guy or a girl who's in that position now, knowing that you left Portland, went to Vegas? Was it worth it? What would you give as far as advice?
So when you're leaving from one place to another, it's helpful. If you're going to move, it's helpful to have roots wherever you're going. Because I often see folks who jump departments and then sometimes come back to their old one. The grass is not always greener elsewhere. In those extreme cities, though, that's not a real snapshot of how people feel about police officers in America. Most people support us. They just happen to have jobs just like we do, and they're not running around on a corner protesting. The political voices that drive policy, unfortunately, are not always accurate as to how people feel about you. So the first thing I would say is most people want good policing. They want policing such as what your company talks about, where you encourage guys to do constitutional type policing, where they know the law, they know what they can and can't do. They stay in those parameters, but they do their job, and their primary job is to remove criminal activity from communities, to make those communities safer. The biggest problem with policing in a place like Portland or New York, where they have these, you look at New York City, the whole rest of the state is different. PJJ, police jiu-jitsu, is taught throughout concepts, principles that we use. Some of our curriculum is taught statewide everywhere but New York City, because New York City is run by activists. And then those cops who serve under those activists have to obey silly laws and silly rules. And you start feeling like everybody hates the police or those kind of sentiments. First off, I think it's important to know that that's not accurate, that most people appreciate us. Even when I worked in Portland, the people who lived in the communities loved us. I was a beat cop in a bad neighborhood in Portland for my whole time there. My last 3 years, I worked in a two-man car with a partner in a gang and gun area with a gang and gun emphasis, my partner and I. That was our emphasis. We were a two-man car. The people in those communities loved us. The activists couldn't stand us. And we never lost sight of the work we did that benefited the little kids that lived in those neighborhoods, the homeowners. Don't ever forget, even when you're serving in those environments, that you're working for those people in those disimpoverished communities who would have no one who would stand. Those politicians don't go stand to watch, and they don't go stand in between those communities and those people who prey on them. But as cops, we got an opportunity to do that. That was very rewarding. So don't ever lose sight of that. And other places can be much, 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 much better. And Vegas Metro's hiring. We take laterals, and it's a great place to work.
Everybody's hurting for cops out there, right?
Yeah. It's hard to find. Do you remember when we would go to the test, man, there would be thousands of men and women. You would show up for a written exam for a decent sized department. There would literally be 4,000 people, 5,000 people. We don't get that now, even at Vegas Metro. It's not even 1,000, it's a couple hundred. You know, we have a hard time filling our academies, and we have a hard time retaining our people. And that's based on when you target the police and say the police are the problem, it becomes hard to retain and it becomes hard to attract guys. And so that's problematic in some of these cities. And it goes nationwide, right?
I would offer that is certainly one factor in why police departments have an issue retaining personnel. I know that you're still active. We're not going to go down that road, but I'm sure that we start pulling apart why there's a retention issue. I think there's probably a cavalcade of things we could explore, and it wouldn't be too hard to figure it out. All you'd have to go to the ranks and say, this is going to be a private conversation. What's wrong here? What are you guys frustrated about? Or talk to the 35 guys that left last year, 50 guys that left last year, and say, why did you leave? You know, and that's it has nothing to do with your agency. That's not what I'm getting to. My point is we can blame so much on the outside forces, but most people know, and you don't have to agree with this, it's just me talking as the host of this training this program, this podcast. We know that any cop will tell you the bit most difficult struggles as a cop typically is inside the four walls of the police department.
There's no doubt.
Yeah. So I don't want to go, don't go down that road. I don't put you in a bad position. I know you're still employed. You can come back on here in 4 years if you're done, and we'll really chop it up and get to the nitty gritty. But so with that being said, just to dial it back a little bit, you said the grass isn't always greener. People have left and come back. And I'm going to just jump in on this one too. And, you know, you can feel free to agree or disagree. All of this is just what I've seen. I'm somebody who just takes in what I'm seeing, process it, try to understand it, then give advice based on it. I have seen a lot of people leave agencies to go to other agencies for money. So when people typically go somewhere for money, for more money, that's when they'll typically come back. However, I have never seen somebody leave for less money or equal money, but to a better agency that's more proactive and supportive, and ever return to the previous agency. So obviously, people, be careful what people tell you. It's not always greener. The grass isn't always greener, because you're standing in fucking mud. They don't want you to leave. Yeah. So I've been around long enough to see this. I have people who are like, I left. I made a mistake. I should have stayed. I'm like, what'd you go for? Like, for the money. I'm like, yeah, you know.
That's true.
Okay, would you agree with that?
Yeah, 1,000%, right? Yeah.
I have rarely found somebody who went to go work at an agency that's got a great reputation and supports their cops. It's like Sheriff Mark Lamb. You're from the Phoenix area originally. Mark Lamb obviously is working on trying to get their guys to be paid more. They are, I'm guessing, making significantly less than probably most surrounding agencies in the greater Phoenix area, in the Valley, quote unquote. Listen, by the way, they got a lot of good agencies out there, but why do people still come to Mark Lamb to go work for him? Because he sends a message that you can come here and be the police and I'll support you. And I'm going to, you know, why do people go to Wayne Ivey in Florida? Why do people go to Grady Judd? Why do people go to these guys and say, I'm going to work for you? They don't make the most. Wayne Ivey's agency doesn't make the most. I can promise you that, right? Compared to like Southeast Florida, they're doing pretty good money down there. They're six-figure earners as patrolmen down there now.
Yeah.
And then you got half the pay, maybe even a little bit more than half the pay. And he's getting more people coming to him because the message is clear, you know? And I don't think it's an industry that's driven by money. I think that sometimes you get lucky enough to like make a decent living at it. But a lot of people who are looking for something in law enforcement are looking for a purpose.
There's no doubt. And the ones who do it well are, right?
Right.
Like you talk about the guys who don't work out who go for money. The guys who take the job for money don't work out.
No, never.
Like it's not a thing, man. You know, I mentioned I've got all these kids running around, and I got five boys, and I haven't tried to make any of them into police officers. Now, I'm not, if one of them feels called to do this, and this is what he thinks he was made to do, and I've got a couple of them that I think that one in particular out of my sons who may end up following me, but this is not a job. This is not a, like this, there are days it's not worth it. They can't pay you enough. And there are days you're stealing money. And so the money thing is negotiable, and anybody who's going to make a decent living at it's probably going to have a side hustle. They're doing something else too, or they're working OT. All the guys, you know, we're all working OT. Yeah. The money is not the answer.
Not saying money isn't an answer. It's just in this industry, you can't use it as a compass of where to go.
1,000%.
To me, it's just a bonus, right? If you found yourself at a great place and you guys are higher paid, that's just a bonus. And that is certainly one of the things that you could use as an agency or an administration to, you know, try. But again, let's look at these places like Seattle, $20,000 bonus. Nobody's coming, right? Minneapolis, nobody's $30,000, $100,000 to start. We'll pay you $250,000 a year. Nobody's willing to come. But then again, I don't know, you can go to where Mark Lamb is at 60, 65. I'm guessing probably that's what I'm guessing they make. And this is beating the fucking doors down there.
Well, and here's the other thing about that. For sure, nobody's coming that has experience and is good at the job, right?
No.
I would never, ever, ever work for Portland again, or I would never work for Seattle. I would never work for one of these agencies. They target their officers. It's an impossibility to work in those environments. I'm willing to risk my safety. I know that's part of the gig. I mean, even to my family's detriment a little bit, I'm willing to work crazy hours and not be there. And you know, a holiday is just another work day, or my kid's birthday could be just another work day. That's the way it is. And that's the way it's always been in my house. My kids know that. I love my kids, but I'm willing to, you know, their mom did a lot of stuff where dad was gone, and I'm still on call right now. I'm in a unit that I could get called out at any moment. So, and do, so I'm willing to take that. What I'm not willing to risk is you taking away my freedom for doing my job, or you taking away my ability to earn for doing my job. So if I start feeling like the administration or the city council or the local government or whatever it is going to target me in that manner, you're going to see me slow down on stuff I'm going to do, because I'm that exposure's not appropriate for my family. They have all this other exposure that I might get killed or maimed or that I'm gone at times. It's not fair to them for me to put at risk those things. And so you get into those really negative environments, nobody's coming that knows the job, that understands the job. You can't attract excellence and treat people in that manner. And those cities are experiencing that. Not that they don't have excellent cops there already. You know, a lot of the stuff I learned about testifying and a lot of my use of force stuff was learned in Portland in my first 6 years, because everything got opposed. I had to know my stuff. I had to understand why I stopped this guy. I had to be able to articulate it. I got deposed multiple times before I ever moved to Vegas. I got sued multiple times. Those experiences were good experiences to set me up for, and I found my passion, and it set me up to do what I do very, very well. But it was a crap environment, man.
Yeah, no question about it. You know, I say these things because they're the truths. And I know people sit here and I often wonder, Chad, about the guy or girl who is sitting jobless and at the worst case scenario, sitting in a jail cell right now, saying to themselves, why did I work here? Right? This would have been fucking fine two states away. You know what I mean? Like, this would have been completely, but these fucking anti-cop lunatics, right? I'm not saying that everything is that way, but it's a wild profession in that sense, that acceptable one place, not acceptable another, or acceptable in majority of places, far majority of locations, and all of a sudden not acceptable in this place. I mean, you know, I'm not going to go into specific events, but I tell people, I warn them, I go, you know, you guys think it's not going to happen to you in these places. You're being targeted. You have anti-police sentiment. You want to either leave now and actually have a career, or when you're fired, or you have a 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 day rip suspension that you're going to have to explain when you get frustrated enough to leave, you're going to put yourself at a significantly lower bracket of even the agencies that need people. They still won't take you once you've got enough black eyes, yeah, and check marks in your jacket. And before that happens, if you're really even considering it, go now. Because you're going to find yourself, I've had people, when I say this, they write to me, it was me, it happened to me, I knew I should have fucking left, da 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 da. Now I can't be a cop ever again in my life, I did nothing wrong. And I believe these guys and girls. I've been around long enough, I know the games that are played. I've been subjected to the game. I've been the target, but not the target, the not the target, but the target. It's a wild game. And if it starts to feel like that, it's not a good way to live. You know, mental health revolving around that kind of life is really, really detrimental. It'll age you quick.
So if you look at the force, the modern force best practices that we come up with, and if you look at, like, even over the last decade, every best practice for an individual who's armed, let's say I'm out in public and the call is a disturbance call, there's a guy with a knife, he's threatening people, he's waving the knife around, he's upset, he's out in a public place, cops are going there. Every best practice we've created has been to benefit the guy waving the knife around. None of it benefits civilians. None of it benefits the police officers responding. And we continue to say, well, we're going to try to benefit this person. And I'm not opposed to anything that makes the officer's performance better. By making the officer's performance better, it actually helps even the person that they might be applying force to, because hopefully they're going to do it better and at the right time and the right decision-making and all those kind of things. But you look at some of these places that begin to pass silly legislation. And in Nevada, even though we're a weird state, we have a governor who wants to be connected to politicians in some of these very liberal places, or is, and he can't point to the policing issues that these other places point to. And even those are not, as you and I know, are not accurate. Some of those are perceptions that have been presented politically. But in Vegas and in the state of Nevada, Vegas Metro by far is the biggest agency. We don't have those issues going on. Like they can't point to a corruption thing or this thing or that thing. We're pretty well regarded in general. And I'm not saying that the departments that get targeted are fairly targeted, but we don't. That's my point. So we had our legislature here start trying to pass these laws, all this reform, for what? For what event? We don't have to pick out certain events, but even recent events in the last several years, you look at the law enforcement response to the officers involved in those events. That was pre your reform, and they did everything that you would have wanted them to do. This problem's a made up problem. So what ends up occurring though, like in the state of Nevada, they passed, I'll give you an example. They passed legislatively. They said, we're not going to make jaywalking a crime anymore. It's not a thing. We're taking it off the books because it's unfairly used to stop certain groups of people. That was the opinion of the legislators here in the state of Nevada. So they said, we're going to take jaywalking off the table and we don't want cops to stop people for jaywalking. Okay, that's fine. Whatever. You know, you decide that. Well, then we started going around to briefings to talk about this legal update. And we had officers and sergeants saying, well, I'm going to do this workaround and still stop the guy because I know they really want me to stop him. They must have just meant don't stop anybody in a racial manner, which we already don't. So they probably want me to really... And we were like, no, stop it. They don't want you to stop him. What you're going to do if someone jaywalks is absolutely nothing. Because on your body cam, you're going to try to turn it into pet in the roadway or whatever crap you're going to try to turn it into. And you think they're going to back you when that turns into a foot pursuit with the gun and you have to dump this guy. And they review the video and they go, oh, it's a jaywalk. And you go, no, it's a pet in the roadway. But a month ago, you would have called it a jaywalk. What you're going to do is nothing. You're going to do zero because that's the dumb law they passed. Now we can attack the law and we'll look at the increase in ped deaths and we'll build data and we'll go back at them and go, okay, we need this back on the books. But until then, you're going to obey every stupid law they pass. Because if you don't, to your point, Dennis, if you don't, you're going to end up losing your pension and losing your job. And these lunatics are not going to pat you on the back because you got into a foot pursuit off a jaywalk stop that you're not supposed to do with a dude with a gun and shot him. They're not going to think you're a hero for saving the community. They're going to be mad you shot the guy with the gun. So, you know, you have to be cautious of these changes. That's what I love about your company. You guys are one of the best at articulating legislation, interpreting it, and then putting it into place in an actual event. And not everyone can do that. You guys do a very good job of saying, hey, this is what the law says. This is what might happen on a stop. And these are ways that are appropriate to apply and to apply that legislation. I think you guys do a very good job of that. And that's needed more.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you very much for the kind compliment. Going back to what you said about them banning jaywalking here in the state of New Jersey, our attorney general ended pursuits. Yeah. I mean, like overall, they were done. And what happened was every criminal in the world found out cops in New Jersey could not chase anymore. So what did they do? Terrorized the state of New Jersey and stole cars. They're still doing it, but stole cars like you wouldn't believe. I mean, it was people, they're literally going to people's houses looking for the key fobs, taking them right out of the garage. Anything, they weren't crossing the line and going to significant carjackings because they know that that's really where the penalties are at. But lenient prosecutors, no pursuit policies, cops can't chase. They actually had every county in the state of New Jersey and every chief of police get together, go back and say, you guys fucked up big time. And they gave it back to us. They changed the AG guideline back. So I'm glad that they actually woke up, but that was in response to something that didn't even occur here. And that wasn't an issue. What they don't tell you on the other side of things is that after these guys steal cars, they drive them at like 110 miles an hour through the city streets of the towns that they're from. Newark, Namely's Newark, Patterson. They've killed several people driving erratically, crashed into people, pedestrians. They've killed several. That's not reported in the paper. I know that for a fact that stolen cars have killed the innocent people of Newark who are walking down the street and these kids come down, these stolen cars, 100, 120, 110 miles an hour. No car, no cop chasing them and have killed people. That's never brought up. Let's handcuff the police so we can push a political agenda. It is absolutely absurd. And I think a lot of us sit here and say, how does any of this make sense? Right? Like, how does any of this stuff make any sense at all? Let's just take out the political agendas out. Let's just talk common sense. Let's talk, and I'm not going to go on the road, gun control. Yeah. Okay, let's just break it down to what it is. There's 50 million guns in the country. 50 million. You can print ghost guns now. Those things are available on the dark web, I'm sure of it. Yet we're limiting magazine sizes. Like what? You know, you're using an eyedropper to try to fight a forest fire. It's just wild. I mean, so you sit here and I don't think it's a political thing. You just say to yourself, what the fuck are these people talking about? And we know that it's meant to do one thing. It's to get reelected. Yeah. That's what the whole game is. They want to appease a certain group and get reelected and say, yeah, cops are the bad guys. It's really, if you think about it, it's really just wild. Cops are the bad guys. How are cops the bad guys? The only people showing up to do this friggin' job and you're saying cops are the bad guys. So I got you. Right. Yeah. Right. Give us nothing to work with. Give us subpar training and then call us the bad guys. The only people who are showing up to do this job for essentially 1/10 the price that they should be getting paid to put their lives on the line every single day. But I will say this at the end of it. The job is still important. It has to matter. It is not going away. This profession will always be here. And I will certainly show up. As long as men, women, and blue are showing up, I will certainly show up to be the voice of compassion, encouragement, motivation, and direction on how to do this appropriately because people are still showing up. So you have to have all those things. You have to show up still with enthusiasm to do this job. If you're not enthusiastic about this job, you're going to get killed. You just cross that opportunity of where I might get killed with unenthusiasm, you're going to be in big trouble.
And you're going to get killed a number of ways, right? I mean, that's why guys end up in poor health. That's why guys end up with poor mental health. That's why they end up with addictions. You're going to get killed in multiple ways. And so your point's super valid. The job is still important and it's honorable. And I don't tie my worth to what other people think of me in general, period, in the story. I mean, you've got a much larger presence than I do. Social media, I think. I don't know. I don't pay attention to such things, but mine's grown over the years and people will recognize me and talk to me at different things. I went to IBJJF Worlds, which is a jiu-jitsu tournament here in Vegas. Last weekend, my brother-in-law competed and went and supported him, who's a police officer out of Phoenix. He's a homicide detective. And guys recognized me and came up to me and talked to me, which is always gratifying. But my point being is, even if they didn't, I don't really care about that. I always tell coppers, it's still a good job. And if you can come up with formulas or things that you can live by, you cannot get eaten up by all the negatives of the job. You have to acknowledge them. They're real. It's important that guys like you carry the torch and fight the good fight, if you will. It's important that guys like me do the same, that we're voices of reason. But I always tell guys, at the end of the day, you can't allow what a group thinks of you or what anyone thinks. It's almost like coaching my kids. I mean, you have to have processes inbred in you that are going to bring you satisfaction, and the job can be a big part of that. I'm gonna when I'm done, I'm gonna be happy. I've done everything I really want to do within law enforcement, and it'll be nice to be done and not have to punch the clock anymore. But I'm gonna miss it. I know I'm gonna miss it, and I'm gonna be very. I'm beyond grateful that I've been a police officer in America and that I've served in some big cities. I'm beyond grateful for my opportunities to coach and train and travel this nation and meet cops from all different agencies. That is something I can't even buy. And the experiences I've had are priceless. And so I'll always be grateful for my time as a police officer in America. It's truly to be counted among some really special people to have done this job.
Well said. I actually had some, it's funny how things I was thinking about this morning kind of tie back into the conversation we're having today. I do most of my thinking while I'm working out. That's where the brain for me goes into deep thought, stimulated by typically some self-growth, business mindset podcast. And, you know, I think about what my work means and what our work means. And it's not that I can fix the whole thing, but I think I can leave it better than I found it.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. And hopefully at some point when I'm no longer the guy, that somebody else will pick up the ball and continue to progress this forward. And it's wild to think that there are people like you and I and other folks in this country who have to recognize it, that you're their only hope, Obi-Wan Kenobi, right? Like you have what it takes to make the difference, and not doing anything because of irrational fears of what do people think, what do people say about me, is really the ultimate sin. So I mean, you want to see how bad people troll me, go on my TikTok account and get fucking murdered. I mean, if you don't murder me on the things that I'm saying, they're murder me in the way that I look. And this, like, one guy writes yesterday, like, yeah, the only thing he knows is the truth about is how much testosterone he does. And I'm like, first of all, thank you, because I haven't touched steroids my entire life. I don't take any supplements, and you're recognizing that I'm sized well. Appreciate you. All right, that's so.
You do work out, you know, your body.
I worked out 23 years. I'm working out, you know. So, you know, I think about that. Like, what is the end game here? And the end game is, Jesus. I mean, I'm playing the game right now. I'm playing the game every day. When I receive a message that says, got one from a kid, I put it on our Instagram story. This is literally what he wrote to me. And if you were paying attention to our Instagram account, it was on our story. You know, I'll see if I can pull it up. I can read it to you. Here it is. Just want to say thanks, everyone, at Street Cop Training. I'm a new officer 2 years on and was stopping a car on the interstate. Ever since I started following Street Cop Training in the academy, I focused on the passenger side approach and made a stop for speed and a bunch of other indicators. As I got out of the car, I walked around my vehicle and stopped at my taillights because something was not right. The driver shifted his car into reverse and accelerated backwards in an attempt to disable my vehicle. Long story short, if I had made a driver's side approach or didn't have the time to observe the car from the passenger side and walked up, I would have been crushed. In the academy, they taught passenger side approach, but nobody ever used it. Thanks again. Your training really works. Keep it up. I mean, when you say really works, we're talking about save this guy's life.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you say to yourself, like, what's the why? I mean, every day I'm reminded of what the purpose of all this is.
Yeah. I used to tell my new guys when I was an FTO, you know, the DA might not prosecute a case or drop a case or whatever might happen on this next call. I used to tell them, don't worry about any of those other things. It's your call. Do the best you can with the call. Do the best you can for the people that you're coming in contact with. Make the best choice you can on the information you have. Be a pro. Know policy. Know the law. Stay in shape. Get your hands-on skills up. All these things are going to be the things that are going to make you happy or not happy as a totality of work. There's always things I'm going to fight against, because they're worthy fights. There's always things I'm going to strive against, because that someone needs to step up and do it. So I'm okay with that. But wins are temporary, losses are temporary. It's doing the right thing at the right time for the right reasons. That's forever. Not quitting, that's forever. I can remember distinctly, I was a senior guy on a squad back in the day where through some political wrangling, it was three squads and we were vying for days off, and there was a way they were supposed to pick it by seniority and by who worked where. And our squad ended up getting screwed, and we ended up getting screwed on days off, and we also got assigned to a new area. All these young guys were pissed off in the office. We were meeting with our Sarge, and I was a senior member. I'd already been in SWAT at that time. I'd come back to this team. It was like a street crime suppression team. And what happened to us wasn't fair. It was unfair, and it kind of happened in the dark of night while we were off, and the other guys kind of screwed us over, which shouldn't happen in a larger unit. It was unfair what happened to these guys. And I can remember sitting in the sergeant's office, and these guys were moaning and, oh, that's it. I'm not going to make so many arrests now. I won't see these guys. You know, they were all just moaning about what they deserve, what they should have gotten that they didn't get. And we're kind of going around the room, and it comes to me, and I said, you know, I don't do the job for the sheriff. I don't do the job for the lieutenant or for the captain. I said, no offense, Sergeant. And Sergeant and I knew each other well. We had been partners back in the day on a graveyard shift in patrol. I said, I don't even do it for you, Sarge. I do it for me because it's the right thing for me to do. I'll change nothing. I'll work my ass off. I'll take guns off the street. I'm going to put dudes in jail. I could care less if I get screwed on this other stuff. That's not why I'm doing it. I'm going to do my job so that when I'm done, I can look back and go, I did that the right way. Now, I'm ticked off about this in the night move that's happened. And if we can reverse it, I'm down, you know, let's fight the fight. But I won't change my work. Zero. I won't change what I do day to day in my car one bit, because that's not why I do it. I don't do it for them. I don't do it for more money. I don't do it for anything. I do it for me. And who we are. When we look at each other in this room, the reason you have gripes is because of the level of work we do. Why would we change that aspect of it? That should not change at all. So that's where the job has value, I guess, you know?
You remind me of something I used to say to guys, because of course, you know, everybody's always ready, willing, and able in the beginning, but as you get more salty, the bitching and moaning. So I always tell people, we'd have guys 18 months on the job. Oh, I'm getting pushed to days. Oh, I didn't miss the seniority for the afternoon shift. And I mean, really complaining. And I would say, go back to your interview when the chief sat you down. If he would have said to you, hey, you'll get the job, kid, but you got to work midnights for the first 5 years, you would have said, done, no problem. But now you're here. Now you got it. You got an undesirable shift. 18 months on the job, and you're fucking bitching and moaning and complaining. You are just have lost perspective. I've said this time and time before. When I worked at my final agencies that I worked at, I mean, the things that people were complaining about, some of them substantiated, some of them make sense, and some of them just absurd. The only people who never complained and were always grateful were the handful of guys, and I don't think any girls transferred, so I'm just going to use it as guys, that came from other agencies and were so appreciative that like the cars worked. Yeah. I'd have guys like, fucking MDTs are didn't work for 20 fun minutes today. And I'm like, we have computers.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know what a 1029 moving is? Like, do you know what that means? And they're like, no. And I'm like, that means you got to call dispatch. Hopefully there's one available so they can run a plate for you before the plate gets out of your way because you're looking to stop the car. Like, do you guys have any just wild.
Cops of Vegas Metro, when they complain, even the Portland Police Bureau at 98 to 2004, they can't imagine what it was like to work there. It is unbelievable. And I've been so blessed and so taken care of. And don't get me wrong. Like I had great times in the street in Portland, Oregon with my buddies. Running on calls. Those are some of the finest police officers I've ever met, but it is just so hard to work in that environment. And you are just a target. You know, before I got the job there, a senior guy I mentioned earlier in the podcast, I went to college first and then the agency sponsored me. And then I had to go to work for the agency. And a guy who was involved in teaching us at the university who worked for the agency took a liking to me, and he was a good dude. And he said, hey, we need to go have coffee. I actually don't drink coffee, but we went to a coffee shop and sat down, and he says, I want to tell you the truth about this job. because I like you and you're a little bit older than the average student. I was already married, already had a couple of kids when I switched over to law enforcement. I'd been a firefighter, switched over to law enforcement. So he says exactly what you said earlier in the podcast. He goes, bad guys are going to try to hurt you or kill you or complain on you or lie about you. That's part of the job. The media hates you. It's part of the job. Remember, we're in Portland at the time. The media and politicians don't care for you. Part of the job. He goes, what will make you want to swallow your own gun will be what your own agency does to you. And he goes, that's what you have to be prepared for. And I remember thinking at the time, man, I thought I knew this guy. He must be like a troublemaker on the down low or something. I don't understand what he's saying. Certainly, if I do the right thing, I'm not going to get in trouble and everyone's going to be okay with it. And he was like, the fifth floor, because at that time in Portland, that's where the chief's office was. He goes, that is where you're going to get attacked. And he goes, you just have to be ready for it. Like just get prepared, get your mind right so that you'll deal with it well and you won't let it crush you. And I remember thinking, man, maybe he's like a shady cop or something. I don't know. You know, and he wasn't shady at all. He knew exactly what he was talking about. And you can't even understand it till you experience it. So as long as you understand that though, and you wrap your head around it and go, okay, well, I'm still going to be who I am. It becomes incumbent upon me to actually understand what I can and can't do, what policy says, be able to articulate myself well, and to be a high level performer so that when these guys question me, I'll actually be able to say, well, this is why I did what I did. And it's, by the way, it's within policy, then that helps deal with that. You also have to have little, in my experience, little formulas. Like I have a formula I call five smooth stones. And I try each day to do something. I try to use my gift of agency well. I try to make good choices that won't embarrass me or my family name. I try not to do crap that would embarrass me. I try to do something physical. I try to do something for me, something spiritual, whether that could be anything, or people could take that one out. I don't care. I try to serve somebody else or do something nice for somebody else. And I try to do something that builds up my education or my knowledge. And those are my five things that literally I start every day and I kind of check them off as I do them. And if I do at least three of the five, I'm generally happy. If I have a day where I don't do where I don't make good choices, clearly that can bring havoc into my day. If I do a day where I don't work out, if I do a day where I do nothing for me spiritually, I don't try to help anybody else, and I don't do anything to make myself smarter, if I have days like that, I don't have any growth. And if you build those days up, and a lot of cops do, a lot of cops just go to work, go home, go to work, go home, go to work, go home, and they're not working on any of their personal things. I don't care how you do that. For me, it only works if I'm intentional. So I have an intentional process that every day I start and I try to build up my five stones. And if I can get three or more in my bag by the end of the day, I'm probably going to have a good day. And I'm going to have more good days than bad. But you have to have, in my experience in this job, you have to have a way, and it's got to be structured, that you're going to continue to work on yourself. And that's gonna take care of all this crap that we could talk about for hours, you know.
On that note, we can't talk about it for hours. I want to invite you back onto the podcast for the next one, because we're gonna end it here, because going now into the routes that I want to go to, I'm gonna leave the audience with context of what I'd like to speak with you next about. Chad, we'll be here for another hour and a half. And essentially those things are you being a Brazilian jiu-jitsu instructor, use of force expert, traditional academy tactics versus actual training, critical review, how we can do things better, the state of training for physical, for having to be physical and use physical force versus traditional training actually in the field. So I'm sure you could just riff on that shit for quite a while. I think it'll make it for a great episode. People want to hear your opinion on it, especially for a man who based a lot of his life and his professionalism around these exact topics. So, you know, I think what you said was profound today. I think that people got to hear from a lot of wisdom from a man who's been around for some years with 8 children, which gives you wisdom in general. How old are your kids? Is that I'm curious about this.
So all the way from 31 down to an 8th grader. So I've got 2 still at home. I've got a junior in high school and an 8th grader, and all the other ones are out of the house.
And so, this is the only other question I have for you. Did you get snipped?
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to say,
my wife wanted 10 kids, bro. She drove this train. And at 8, I was like, okay, we're good. At 8, I said, hey, we've got great kids. I'm in love with you. Pregnancy's not healthy for you. Your body's gone through so much.
It's brutal.
All in a day.
Pregnancy's brutal. Right. People don't realize pregnancy's fucking brutal.
It's amazing. She looks the way she looks. She looks great. She looks, she always says, hey, if you're going to tell people I have 8 kids, she goes, I'm not mad at them. They got to envision some 250-pound gal. She goes, that's normal. She looks great. You would never know she's had 8 kids.
Well, I'm very happy that you have found such happiness and fortune and love. And it's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Dude, she is, you know, just on that.
A diamond in the rough. Unicorns.
Unicorns, dude. And I realize how lucky I am. Trust me. So yeah, I'm going to stick with that one as long as she'll have me.
That's very appropriate. And I think there are many people in the world searching for that unicorn. And I'll speak on behalf of men. It's a very, very, very difficult thing to be patient enough to find somebody like Chad's wife, but it's worth it.
It's worth it, dude.
It's just worth it, man. And you just gotta hold on to hope that there is something great out there. Don't settle for less. Yep. When you settle for less, you're gonna be fucking divorced with half your pension. That's the truth.
And then you gotta focus on her. If you find her, you gotta stick with her, man.
Yeah, I mean, like, dude, how, just let these audience know real quick, how important is being in love, especially raising children?
So she is the one. I remind myself how much she means on a regular basis, and the little things I'm grateful for her for, I try not to lose sight of those, because I could create in my mind, you know, that, oh, she's not that good at this, or, oh, she's not that good at that. And pretty soon I could screw up a pretty good thing. So if you do find someone who's supportive of you, who actually loves you and who treats you well, raises your children well, for me, it's been important for me to make sure that I focus on her and I don't give other women any attention. I'm not worried about somebody coming forward and saying, oh, guess what? This guy's been texting me dick pics or whatever. I don't do that stuff. I focus on her. And I remember how I felt about her when I asked her if she'd marry me. And I've never changed that feeling for her in my heart. And how happy I was when she said yes. I had nothing when she said yes. I had nothing to offer her. We were poor. We lived in poor circumstance for years. And she supported me and loved me anyway. And she loved me when nobody knew who I was and I wasn't a coach and all that stuff. So I never forget that. And I still treat her the same today that I did when she loved me and I wasn't anything. You know, I'm still not anything great, but I'm certainly more than what she married. So I just try to remember that. And I try to make sure that she knows that I feel that way about her.
I think it's pretty clear.
Yeah. Thank you.
It is important.
She's important.
I think people need to know and be set forth with examples of things like that. People need to hear stuff like that. That's why I brought it up. Even though it's a police podcast, it's important that people know that a strong foundation at the home front really, really can make or break a great life.
Yeah, it's benefited me every step, for sure.
I bet. My brother, it was a pleasure. By the way, plug your Instagram page. Plug anything you want to plug.
So guys, you can find me at C4C Operator or at C4C PJJ. C4C Operator will give you a little more Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, MMA, a little bit of my family stuff. I'll put C4C PJJ on Instagram is straight up stuff that you could use on the job. It's a lot of wrestling. It's a lot of tactics. We put out free information all the time. I've got well over 7,000 posts of drills you could do. So if you want to train or you want to look at some opportunities, there's that. I'm on Facebook, but it's more Instagram that I'll post stuff. And then on YouTube, Chad Lyman and C4CPJJ there as well.
You're the man.
No, you guys are changing lives, dude.
Well, I think you are too. So don't downplay that.
Yeah.
Well, the work's important, and I'm glad you're showing up to do it, and everybody appreciates it. And we're going
to
do this again.
The next podcast, though, I would love to do another one with those topics in mind, and I wrote them down, and we could literally speak very directly to those. I have quite a bit of experience of seeing those things done well and not as well.
Yeah, we're going to do that. Frankie's listening, so we'll get you back in within quickly. Not going to wait till November to have you back on. We'll do it real quickly.
Yeah,
we'll do
awesome.
Next version of it. So appreciate you, man. Thank you so much for taking the time. We're honored.
Thank you. I am as well. We'll see you soon, brother.
Be safe. Sir. I'll see you. Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer.